It is that time to get our view from the north. He's the man in the mirror. You can find his work for Comcast Sportsnet online. Go CSNNW.com. Join his many conversations and topics on Twitter. Use the handle at Aaron J. Fentress. He's talking ball. I'm Comcast. Channel 737 in high def. We welcome in Aaron Fentress. Mr. Fentress, how are you today, sir?
Mr. Fentress is doing all right, I think.
You think? Well, you see, I would guess you would have the final answer here. So when you figure it out, let me know.
Will do.
All right. I was reading that this coming Wednesday, Peyton Manning's $19 million base salary would be guaranteed. Do you think he will retire, be cut, try to hang on with another team, and do you think he could still even play?
I think Denver's trying to let him retire, and if he doesn't retire, he's going to get cut. which shouldn't be how you want to go out unless you intend to play. So I think if he ends up getting cut, that's essentially saying that he's going to try to play again,
okay,
or maybe re-sign with the Colts for one day, something like that. But I think that's pretty much how it's going to go down. It sounds like he might want to play, by all his reports, some people are saying he's going to end up in L.A., or he might be looking at Houston or whatever. I think it's a huge mistake. I don't think he can play again. At the end of the season 2 years ago, he started to struggle, and then he was horrible in the playoffs. So the speculation was, well, he was hurt, you know, because he started out that season really hot, remember?
Oh, yeah.
And so you think, okay, well, he was hurt, he'll come back the next year. Well, he came back this year, and he was worse. So he's shot. I mean, unless there's some miracle drug he's looking into, you know, wherever Kobe goes in Germany or wherever, to get his arm fixed and, you know, put a couple of bionic parts in there from Steve Austin, then he's done. So, but there are teams out there that would probably want him just because he's Peyton Manning, just because you think, well, he can game manage, we have a good defense, et cetera, et cetera. But I just think that's a mistake. I think he's just having one more year where he throw maybe 12 touchdowns and 18 interceptions and maybe get into the playoffs and just get killed. I think they got not lucky, but they were pretty fortunate in the playoff run this time around that their defense did a great job, but they also caught some breaks. And the odds of that happening again, especially with a brand new team, when you are now a role player, are just astronomical. So he's just asking for a poor ending when he's been gift-wrapped the perfect ending to his career.
A lot of folks around here were focused on the Oregon players in the combine. Vernon Adams has generated some debate on this show. He ran a 4.8 and change. Now, obviously, you got to see him play up close and personal.
Yeah.
Kind of a unique case with his size. How do you think his combine hurt, helped, and how do you gauge his chance of the NFL as a draftee or a free agent?
You know, it's so hard with him because he doesn't check very many boxes other than the moxie and the arm. And he does have great escapability. He doesn't have great speed. He's not Russell Wilson. That comparison needs to go out the window. They have the same height, but Wilson's thicker and he can run better. When Wilson gets out of the side of the pocket, he's a running back.
Yep.
You know, Vernon gets out of the side of the pocket, he's a concussion, which is what we saw against TCU. He got out of the pocket and he could not make a move on those guys, and he got cracked. Russell Wilson makes moves on the guys, and he's still running. So he's not a guy. He's a guy who might make people miss in the pocket and get out. But once he gets out, he's not a threat to run. So he's got to make a play, or he's going to get squished. And he's not very big, and we saw him struggle with throwing on time. You know, first and second reads, be damned, he was going to run around and buy some time and make a spectacular play, much to the chagrin of the coaches. That's not going to play well in the NFL, as one NFL scout told me. He called him the 1AA Johnny Manziel, basically meaning he's an undersized guy who can make plays with his feet behind the line of scrimmage. He's not a great threat to run. He can throw it up and have some success, and he did most of that at the 1AA level, but it's just not going to translate into the NFL. But as far as I'm concerned, to me it's like he's so gifted at just being a good football player that it's unfair to say, oh, well, he's not this, don't give him a chance. I think someone's going to give him a chance, and I think he's going to go out and get a chance to perform. And for all I know, it could just be like one of these situations where the guy's just good. You know what I mean? I mean, sometimes a guy can just play. It doesn't make any sense. There's no rhyme or reason to it. He just makes plays. And so we'll see if he can pull that off. I mean, I wouldn't write him off, but I think it's going to be tough because I just think there's too many negatives working against him.
Interesting. Next up, Braylon Addison. Kind of a personal fave of mine. It's just because he does so much. But, you know, he's tough. He's got a good skill set, 5'9". What's the word on what he did in Indy, and how do you think his game may translate to Sundays?
Yeah, a scout told me before the draft that he needs to run well. He thought he was a third or fourth rounder, but that if he ran well, that would solidify that. If he didn't run well, he went in there and ran a 4.6, then that could drop him to later rounds. And, of course, he went in there and he ran a 4.66. So then I asked the same scout, I said, how much does that hurt him? He said, well, you know, we'll see how he runs on pro day. So there's still a speculation that maybe that 4.66 wasn't indicative of how fast he is. I mean, he looked faster than 4.66 on the field. Maybe not much faster, but he seems faster than that. To me, he did well in the quickness drills, so he definitely has the quickness. He's got good hands. You know, and he's a football player, almost like we just talked about with Vernon. This guy can just play. He could be one of these guys who just gets out there and he just can play.
Right.
I mean, all the numbers be damned, he can just play. You know, I still think he's going to get drafted. I think it's going to be lower than third or fourth round, though, because of the lack of the long speed. But he can return punts. And I think he'll be someone's, you know, fourth or fifth receiver, a slot guy who can play some special teams and then see if he can develop from there. He kind of reminds me right now of Sammy Strotter. Remember him from
Oregon State? Oh, yeah, from
OSU,
sure.
Yeah, he didn't run a great 40 time, but he had quickness. He made plays, but, you know, he lasted like 3 or 4 years, I think, in the NFL, then he was out. So we'll see if Braylon can do the same or do better.
All right, let's get to the NBA. So last night, the Blazers go into the Garden and take my Knicks apart. I've been a Knicks fan since the late 1960s. You follow this league pretty closely. They were mocked in their own building. Is this as low as that franchise has sunk? And should I officially start wearing a bag over my head?
Okay, I don't think it's as low as they saw. I think the lowest point was when right after the Marbury experiment didn't work. So I think initially it kind of did for a minute, and then it fell off, right?
Yeah, this, a minute is about
there,
it.
Don't you remember Isaiah Thomas got there and made a few quick six moves, and they were, like, decent? I think they made the playoffs. And then Marbury was Marbury, and I think they had Van Horn in there, and it just fell apart, and all his bad contracts, and everything's down. That, to me, was the lowest point. Now, Porzingis, man, Porzingis is legit. You got a legit young big guy to build around. So I think if you have that, you have hope. And they're still New York. They just have to wait for the right free agents to come free who want to come there. I think the problem is Carmelo. Like, why would you, if you're another marquee guy, why would you want to go play with Carmelo?
I have no idea.
The two guys I would least want to play with would be Carmelo and James Harden because they're ball hogs. They command the ball, and they will do whatever they want to do when they want to do it, whether it's the most optimal thing to do. They're spectacular players, and no doubt about that, but as spectacular as they are, they also hurt you because they just do things that are all about them. So if you're another star, why would you want to go play with him? Because it's clearly his team. He stayed there. He got the big, giant contract. So it's his team. You're going to be number two to him. So I just think that it's going to be hard for them to build around Carmelo. Plus, he's starting to age. Like, you saw him miss that dunk.
Oh, my God, that was painful.
Is he 31 right now? He's 31, right?
Yep.
Yeah, see, so he's like, you know, he's starting to climb to that point where he's not going to be as great, and he's still going to be making $27 million a year or whatever. So that, to me, is the big problem. I would trade that guy in a nanosecond. I'd say, look, dude, waive your no-trade clause. You got your money. Let's send you somewhere we have a chance to win. We can get some pieces back and continue rebuilding around Porzingis. Until that happens, unless they get lucky. I mean, who knows? Durant's coming free. But could you imagine Durant and Carmelo? That just wouldn't even make any sense. They'd both be sitting around waiting who had the ball first and just jack up a three. I don't know. It just he should have gone to Chicago.
Well, I'll tell you what. I think the word you're looking for is chucker.
He is a chucker.
And by the way, he turns 32 in May, so it's not.
See, that's what I'm saying.
No, it's painful.
Let me ask you this. Do you guys have cap space?
Well, they've made some room for cap space, but
maybe you can get Howard.
What's the? Oh, great! That's all we need.
Well, okay. The thing about Howard though is Howard will come there and play defense and take pressure off of Porzingis, and Porzingis can blossom more offensively. And then you got Carmelo, who still can play. I'm not saying Carmelo can't play.
Right.
I'm just saying he can't carry. And then now you should be a playoff team at least.
All right, well, and hopefully
give me some hope.
Maybe they can get a coach who does more than sits around liking porn on his phone.
Ooh.
I had to put that one in there.
Damn.
So, Trailblazers got smoked last night, but that to me, it was almost a throwaway game. I mean, they won their three straight to begin the road trip. We talked last week. We were kind of like, all right, let's see what happens when they hit the road. Outside of Golden State, maybe San Antonio, the West is pretty vulnerable. I'm not talking about making the finals, but is it me or when you watch this Portland team, do they kind of grow on you? Kind of an easy team to pull for?
Oh, definitely. I think they're definitely fun to watch because everything they're doing is unexpected, and you're watching a lot of young guys develop. You're watching a lot of role players buy into their role and do their job. They play with energy. They're well coached. They don't make a lot of stupid mistakes. And they have two guys who can just fill it up, and Lillard and McCollum. McCollum has really blossomed to a legitimate scoring guard. He's not tradable unless you're guaranteed to get a certified annual All-Star back. Like, I would not trade him. I wouldn't trade him for any of these young guys. Maybe a couple of them. But like, if Andrew Wiggins was available for McCollum, I don't know if I'd do it. That sounds crazy. I know that sounds crazy, but what is Wiggins doing?
Yeah, that's
like,
a good
to me,
point.
Wiggins isn't better. Now, I'd probably do it because he's bigger and more athletic and he's Wiggins, but I would pause. Like, I would totally pause. That's how good I think McCollum is. They're fun to watch, and I'm amazed. Like, I'm still amazed because I don't believe this is a really good team. I think they're just playing really well. There's a difference. Like, they're gonna hit a ceiling at some point, and they're gonna have to make three or four roster changes before they're ever competing. This roster as it is not going to contend ever. But the fact that they play so well together and just put things together on both ends of the court and everyone's so unselfish, it's beautiful basketball to watch.
Sure is. I thought Olshay made a good point last week. He's like, don't forget, if McCollum didn't get hurt, this might be his third year as a starter instead of his first year as a starter. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
I don't know about all that. I don't know about it. He wasn't going to start over Wes Matthews. Come on now.
Hey, I'm just quoting the GM. You got a problem, take it up with him.
I'll call him.
Final thought here. Oregon Hoops, I saw you posted the story. The first half last night, they couldn't throw it in the ocean. But, man, they kept it together, and they wound up walking away from UCLA. It seems that there's just lacking a true powerhouse anywhere in the country. So they finish well, end up with a 2 or 3 seed. Any reason to think they don't have a legit shot at making a nice run here?
I would say not at all. I mean, I think that clearly it's as wide open as it's been. I think I was given Matt Preen was posted something about, why are they being considered number one seed? And I made the point, well, how many six loss teams are one seed? And, well, there's going to be probably a couple of six loss teams that are going to be one seed this year, just the way it is. I mean, historically, no, that's not the recipe to be a one seed, but it's so wide open. Just, you know, my beloved Tar Heels, I mean, they lost to Northern Illinois. They blew that game to Duke. You know, they're ranked 8th, I think, right in front of the Ducks. And I would not sit here and say that. At the beginning of the year, I would think Carolina would crush the Ducks, but right now, if they played, I think that'd be a toss-up. And I think that's how this tournament's going to be. I do think there's probably going to be a couple teams that are going to rise up and be, like, you know, world beaters. But, you know, we all know the NCAA tournament. Any given night, any given day, when someone's hot, they can win it. And I do believe Oregon is capable of, A, getting hot, and, B, beating anybody when they are hot.
Yeah, I thought we did some math the other day, and if you add up the losses of the top 10 teams, it's more than it's been. I went back 10 years. If you add up, there's 53 losses among the top 10. It's like actually staggering. That's as wide open as it's been.
Yeah, it's definitely crazy. I mean, I searched the records for one seed, and I found somewhere, and I saw like 4 or 5 years back where most one seeds had 3, maybe 4. 2 losses, there. And we're guaranteed right now to have, I think the top 2 records have 4 losses, right?
Well, you got Kansas has 4 losses. Michigan State's number 2 with 5 losses. Virginia's 4 with 6 losses.
Yeah, exactly. So
it's
you're guaranteed
crazy.
To have 6 losses, 1 seed. And so, and the 2 seed. Oh, yeah, so it's definitely a bunch of it's awesome. It's going to make for a great bracketology, right?
Yeah. I can't find it. And I have a new way to screw it up.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so follow this guy on Twitter at Aaron J. Fentress, online csnnw.com. Good stuff. Always fun, AF. Appreciate your time, man.
All right, man. Talk to you soon.
Take it easy.